Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Welcome, everybody, to your freshly delivered Owlpost. I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and I'm so excited that she is here, as she is with me every week. I am the luckiest wizard in the world to have with me Drea Kaufman.
Hello, everyone.
Well, hello. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you tonight?
Doing okay. I gotta say, feels a little bit like Phoenix where I am right now. So
that's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's hot. It's 103 here, so no air conditioning.
Oh, that's really funny because it's like 85 here right now.
Yeah, I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, it's anyway. Also storming horrifically, so I mean.
It's been a long time since we had rain here, but people are not here for the weather.
They're not here
for Owl Post, which they can find everywhere. We're on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you can find your podcast. If you do happen to be an Apple Podcast, hit us up with a star rating review. It's been a while since Dre and I have been able to share a new review with you. And one, we love doing that, but two, we also just know how much it helps the show, and it helps the show grow and other people find us. So just when you're over on Apple Podcasts, hit us up with a star rating review, and whatever you say, we'll say thank you back on the show. So you'll be famous, Owlpost famous. you can find us on Twitter. That's Owlpost famous. It's a thing. You can find us on Twitter, as I said, at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And we have our website at thenerdparty.com where you can find all the shows that we do here on The Nerd Party, as well as if you would like to leave us an email. If you would like to email us, you can go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose Owl Post, and that comes to Drea and I. Now, Drea, we're kind of right on the edge last week.
Mm-hmm.
We really wanted to dive right in, but we had to wait a week.
I know.
And
that's hard.
And that's because last week we found out that maybe it was Hagrid who had opened the Chamber of Secrets. We're not quite sure. And in our chapter 14 of the Chamber of Secrets, Cornelius Fudge, it is really interesting to watch the Trinity talk through this idea. And I was, it's different than the movie. So the decision they come to, I forgot that this is what they come to in the book, and because it is quite different than what they do in the movie.
Yes, their discussion was much more mature in the book than it was. They were very, very aware of how their conversation could impact, everything. And, they wanted to wait before sort of casting any sort of blame or guilt or opening that can of worms, partially because I think they didn't really want to know. And then partially because I don't think they really believed it and they didn't want to upset Hagrid. So, I thought it was a very mature conversation they had for their age. It was interesting.
Well, and part of that, too, was the way in which they were actually putting themselves in the other people's shoes, like Hagrid. They put themselves in his shoes. Well, but Hagrid loves, monsters, but he wouldn't want to hurt anybody. We know him, and Harry putting himself into Riddle's shoes, saying, well, I mean, I understand why, because he wouldn't want to have to just only go back to the Muggle orphanage and not be able to come to Hogwarts. And so it was great. Like you said, the kids are having such a kind of an adult discussion through this and trying to come up with, okay, well, what's the best course? What's the best option with the information that we have available? Like, what do we do with this information? Because it almost maybe feels like they're starting to realize information is power,
mm-hmm.
and can be painful to people. Like, you can hurt people with wrong information. And so them deciding that they aren't going to visit Hagrid unless there's another attack. On the one hand, it's like, but you're going to wait until somebody else is like petrified or maybe dead. That seems strange. But at the same time, it also makes sense because it's like, they don't want to cast more doubt and dispersion on Hagrid if they don't have to.
Right. Right. Pretty much.
What was so interesting, too, was the way in which she adds these little vignettes of their life at Hogwarts, and one of them was just about them having to choose what they're going to do subject matter-wise for year three, which is they not only have to continue in the subjects they're in, but then they get to add other subjects, subjects that interest them or things that they, you know, some wizards might know, oh, I want to do this when I grow up, so I need these subjects. And I kind of like the way that they make their decisions. Of course, Hermione just signs up for everything. And Dean Thomas and Harry, who are both muggles, close their eyes, points their wand at the piece of paper on the list, and whatever ones they land on, that's what they take.
Yeah. I liked that. I like that approach. I mean, I could see my husband totally doing that and being like, that looks good. Yeah, that. I'll take that one.
Harry actually has an interesting and helpful conversation with Percy, because Percy is saying, you know, what classes he might want to take, you know, playing to his strengths, you know, the reasons for maybe wanting to take certain different types of classes, you know, kind of helping explain some things to him, which is nice because, you know, Percy is well-versed in the wizarding world and understands what these classes are all about because he's older. And I was... You know, it's kind of fascinating. This is one of the places where I identify really strongly with Harry, and that, you know, for Harry, he only feels like he's really good at one thing, and that's Quidditch. Like, you know, and I don't know about you, but I've kind of always been one of those people where I haven't really felt good at much. And what I have, it just kind of seemed like, well, what am I going to do with that? You know, so I was really connecting with Harry, even rereading this chapter.
It was good. And I really liked that. I really liked being able to see them, you know, handle this and make all these choices. And it's hard when you're trying to think about your future and you're still so young and you're like, this could change my whole life. And I don't truly understand the impact of that. So, I liked it. I was like Hermione. I would have just signed up for all of them. So I never had that problem when I was a kid. I was like, why are you struggling? Just take them all. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. If you don't like one, you can just take it, you know, you can just stop taking it, or it'll be a learning opportunity. So
that I like that she does that in this book, because as amazing as he is, right, that Harry Potter is, he's still very much a normal person, mm-hmm. you know, who has things that he doesn't feel good at, that he doesn't feel comfortable with, that he doesn't feel like an amazing person to himself. He just feels like Harry. And most of the time, that's pretty mundane and not all that special. And in that way, you know, you're just like, well, I identify with that. I identify with that a lot.
And it's always nice to get a reminder. We have a lot of superheroes and that sort of thing in our world. You know, it's nice to see like the normal everyday struggles that people who do extraordinary things still face. And it's nice to see like how relatable that can be. It kind of goes to play to that whole like anyone can be extraordinary sort of thing. And, you know, we have maybe a slightly different situation here with Harry, but you know, he still has to figure out what classes to take. He still has to decide, like, what if I take a class nobody else is taking and there's nobody that I know to, like, ask questions to? Like, I know lots of people who did that in high school and college, signed up for the same classes because they were afraid of what they would do if they didn't have a comrade. You know, they didn't have, like, an ally in there. So I thought it was really great to see them in that perspective and sort of get that insight and a reminder that while there's all this really supernatural stuff going on, there's also this sort of, like, normal everyday thing that happens. So
Rowling never loses sight of the humanity of the story and the characters. And like you were saying, you know, what if I don't know anybody? Well, I love that Ron's like, well, I'll just take all the same classes you are, Harry, because at least if they suck, we're in them together. So like it's very much I think people of that age, but also just kind of like trying to figure out who you are and not wanting to do things alone, you know? And so it also makes me wonder, like, how in the world is Hermione going to take all of those classes if she signed up for all of them? I wonder if we'll
address that at some point.
Mm. I don't know.
Foreshadowing.
It's so interesting in this chapter too, how she has some time pass. And the next scene that we get is they've been having Quidditch practice, and Harry is on the way back to the dormitory, and Neville Longbottom meets him at the you know, the portrait, basically, and says, "You have to come see this. Harry, I don't know who did it." And like, Harry goes up to their room and finds that all of his stuff from his trunk and everything else is just all over the place. You know, his cloak has been torn down from the four-post bed, and, like, it's just all of his stuff and everywhere. And he whispers to Ron, and he's rummaging through everything, "The diary. It's gone."
I find it so weird. Okay, so I get not wanting to explain what's in the diary or why it was taken, but you could still report it gone. Like, he still could have reported that someone broke into his room and that, like, one of his books was missing and it was a journal. Like, he still could have easily reported that. And I'll bet you anything, like, the teachers have probably heard of a magical object like this before. Like, they sometimes, it's so funny that in books and movies so often that kids get underestimated, right? Like, oh, they won't understand or they don't know that. But in this case, we almost have the opposite, where the kids don't think that the teachers are going to know or understand. So, like, he didn't want to tell McGonagall that this happened because he felt like he'd have to explain what this journal right. was and how it worked, when quite possibly she already knows. Like, Or she'll understand, or at least she'll believe him and be like, mm-hmm. and he doesn't have to tell that it had Hagrid. And at this point, maybe you should. Like, it was just so interesting how adverse to sharing that they were, and how much they thought that they just were going to be misunderstood. And that's just a theme that runs throughout all of this entire series. But I just think it's so interesting that this was the thing he thought was not going to work. Like, he took issue with this one.
Yeah, it is really interesting. And then on top of that, as they're talking it through, you know, Hermione's like, you know, it could only have been a Gryffindor that stole this, because they're the only one who have our password.
Right.
So there's nobody else who could have done this. So not only is the person responsible close at hand in the school, but it's in their own, like, common room. And right. that's the thing that's so interesting in the very next scene, is they're walking down from breakfast to the Quidditch pitch, and Harry's kind of looking around thinking, who here stole that? Like, why would they do that? And then he also starts to hear a voice that they haven't heard for a few months in the walls.
Dun, yes. Dun, dun. Yes. It was very distinct this time. I think in the past we've gotten kind of more loosey-goosey sort of, I don't know, you get sort of like messages and words, but this was very clearly like a sentence and an instruction, like, versus kind of the cryptic words you've been given. This was more like, I'm telling you my plan. Like,
yeah, I'm going to kill this time. That's yeah,
very, very obvious.
Yes. Which is so fascinating too, because the moment that Harry says he hears the voice, Hermione does that face palm, like, and she's like, I've got to go to the library. And Harry's like, what? And Ron's like, because that's what Hermione does. When in doubt, go to the library.
Like, I love that her reaction is not to share what she thinks. Like, I have a theory, but I'm not going to tell. And then just runs off. And you're like, all right, bye. Peace. I'll be here when you get back.
Yeah. And it is really funny. I mean, because it matches the character so well. Like, Hermione, like, oh, I'll be back. I gotta go to the library. Like, how many times has that probably happened to them anyway? Like,
I know
it's
how
gotta
often,
happen
they're
all
just
the time.
Used to this at this point.
Yeah. And before we even get to have a Quidditch match, it gets interrupted because McGonagall comes to get Harry and Ron. And
well, she comes to get Harry. And Ron tags along, and they're all surprised that she doesn't protest and was like, well, I guess you should come too.
Yeah. Which, you know, I mean, I feel like at this point, but with
they're
what's
a trio.
Happened. Yeah, it's the trio. They know they're a thing now, like all three of them, they're friends. And I think I kind of like, you almost get this sense like they are treated a little bit differently.
Right.
Like that there's a... There's a subtle amount of favoritism shown to these three that other people don't get. And I think it's really interesting the way in which that's going to really play out throughout the rest of the series. But you kind of start to see it here that these teachers have a like and a respect for these three that they try not to... I mean, obviously it's not Snape, but pretty much everybody else, teacher-wise, kind of respects, and especially McGonagall, I think. It's almost like she feels kind of like the grandma sometimes. Or their really old aunt.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I do think it's interesting. You were talking about how Quidditch always seems to be getting interrupted from like really terrible things. I think in this case, it probably played to Harry's advantage, because I feel like he would have been distracted the entire time between hearing the voice mm-hmm. and where did Hermione yeah. go and, you know, like all of this stuff. Like everyone was raring to go and he's staring down the Gryffindor table going, who took the diary from my house? You know, like his head was not in the game. And as little as I know about sports, because, you know, you move the ball from the one end to the other end.
Yeah, sports ball.
Yeah, go sports ball. I at least know that when you're trying to do anything that requires focus, if you don't have it, you're not going to be very successful. So it was probably for the best that they didn't actually play. Wood was very upset. But to Harry's advantage, it was probably best that he got called away and it got canceled or postponed or whatever, just because yeah. I think that it wouldn't have been a very good fight battle or a very good match for him regardless.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And on top of that, I don't think that Harry would have been happy to have played the game and, you know, then found out that this had happened, basically. And so, I feel like, and that's the thing that's so interesting. Okay, Gryffindor is playing a Quidditch match. You know, if McGonagall comes to interrupt a Quidditch match for Gryffindor, it's important. And, you know, basically, I love that, Wood is, you know, trying to be like, but Professor, we've got to play for the cup. And she just completely ignores him. You know, she's like, everybody go back to your houses. Potter, you come with me. And then, you know, she sees Weasley tagging along. Okay, you come too. And they find out that Hermione has been petrified as well. And not only that, but she was holding a very small circular mirror and they don't have any idea what that's all about.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too. I also think that's different from in the book. I recall in the book, she had something else in her hand, or from the movie, I'm sorry. I recall she had something else in her hand as well. And I don't know if we just haven't gotten there yet.
We haven't gotten there yet.
Okay. I think either they sped that together or I'm just crushing it in my mind together, which could totally be the case. But yeah, the mirror is super weird if you don't know what happens. So you're just really confused. I also, in the movie, they don't talk about the second girl. Penelope Clearwater is not a victim
yeah.
in the movie. Like, I'd completely forgotten there were two attacks. So when I was reading it, and I was like, two attacks? What? And then I was like, oh, yeah. And it was really interesting to see the impact that that second attack actually has on Percy. When we're reading the rest of this chapter and we get to, you know, they're all being confined to their, we get to the point where McGonagall goes and addresses all of the house and, you know, they're told like you're confined to the tower when you're not in class or in the Great Hall and, you know, you have to have an escort at all times and that sort of thing. And you know, we're seeing sort of the aftermath of that. You see how Percy is just dreadfully, like, this is the one that affected him. And it wasn't Hermione. It was Penelope Clearwater because she was another prefect. And I thought that was so interesting that he connected to the other prefect, thinking he was sort of immune for some reason. He's also pure blood, so I don't know why he's worried anyway. But it was just interesting.
It is something that creates another mystery because Percy's been kind of acting strangely throughout the entire book. And then to have this happen, it's just one more thing to add to the list where Percy is, you know, not quite.
He's a little disconnected yeah. from everything else.
Yeah.
Like he's got his specific things that he thinks and triggers him, but he's very much so not in that same mindset with the rest of his house or even his family. Like with the other Weasleys, you know, Fred and George are still kind of making jokes, but they're also very concerned, especially for like Ginny, because Ginny seems very concerned. You know, like he's not in that same mindset with the rest of his family as to like how they should be concerned and what they should be worried about, which I think is one of the first, we're seeing more and more of that, that attitude and that perspective of him is sort of growing. He's sort mm-hmm. of like the black sheep, if you will, just very different, and not in a bad way, just very different in perspective and understanding of the world from the rest of his family.
Yeah.
Which is probably understandable when you have as many siblings as you have, you want a unique identity. So.
Well, and this is the moment where Harry tells Ron, I think it's time to get my dad's old cloak out again. We've got to go talk to Hagrid at this point. We can't not. Especially with the severity of these attacks. And so they sneak down to Hagrid's hut, and Hagrid answers the door in a shape that they're not expecting. And he's completely frazzled. He's almost putting out the fire with the teapot because he's spilling the water all over the place. And then there's another knock at the door, and the boys have to hide again. And it turns out that Cornelius Fudge, the first time to meet the Minister for Magic, arrives.
I like that he's described as a strange-looking man. Entered.
With a pinstripe suit and a scarlet tie and a long black coat, pointed purple boots, too. I mean,
sounds pretty stylish to me.
And a lime green bowler. Who is he, the Riddler?
Yeah. Yeah, the bowler sort of like triggered it for me. Otherwise, I was like, oh, you're looking pretty stylish. And then I was like, ooh, a hat.
Yeah, not a good call. But what's so interesting is the conversation that we have here between Hagrid and Dumbledore and Cornelius about the fact that he is here to take Hagrid away, because the last time that the chamber was opened, it was Hagrid that they thought it was.
He was the one that took the responsibility.
Yeah, he's the one who took the responsibility, and then, of course, the chamber closed. And so Albus is saying, look, Dumbledore's saying, no, you can't take him. He has my every confidence. You shouldn't be taking him. And Fudge is saying, I can't be seen as to do nothing. And this is where politics really hits the fan. And really comes to the forefront and will continue for the rest of the series, where we see someone in power looking to act just to be seen to do something, and not necessarily because it's actually the right thing to do.
Right. Yes. I found this particular section of the chapter incredibly hard to read. Not from a, I'm drowning in politics, from a, like, injustice standpoint. Like, I wanted to be like Hagrid and stand up and yell and be like, you guys are stupid. Like, I was really getting worked up by this part in the chapter, and I don't know, I feel very strongly that action just for the sake of action, it's not action, it's not helpful, it's not efficient, right? It doesn't accomplish, we're not accomplishing anything. You're maybe putting a sense of ease, but at what cost? Like, there was no good cost benefit ratio. Besides that, if you wanted to take him away, you didn't have to take him to Azkaban, right? Like, you could have taken him to a safe house, or you could have taken him somewhere else in the ministry, you could have said whatever. But you know, and then I just always want to punch Lucius Malfoy in the face. Like, whenever that guy comes around, man, I want to hurt the Malfoys real bad. And the dad does it more for me than the kid. The kid is just an ignorant little prick. The dad knows exactly what he's doing and very strategic. And I really just hate that guy.
Well, and it's so funny how Fudge's action here shows a complete lack of moral center, right? Because again, we're going to punish somebody who we know is probably not responsible, but just so that people think we're doing something. How does that help? You know,
right? Like, what does that resolve?
It doesn't solve anything. And then absolutely the same thing on the other side is we see Lucius Malfoy, who comes and says that the governors have suspended him as headmaster because they're worried. And all 12 of them have signed it. And
it's not even that they're worried. It's that they feel like it's a dereliction of duty. Like,
right.
They feel like he should have been able to prevent all these things. And it's like, that was the most asinine thing I've ever heard.
Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting too, because the chapter ends with Dumbledore and Hagrid giving a speech before they leave. Dumbledore saying that, you know, help will always come to those who ask for it at Hogwarts. And Hagrid saying, well, if anybody wanted to find some stuff, they should follow the spiders.
Well, I actually love that before we get to the point where they're actually leaving, I actually love that Hagrid straight up calls Lucius out. Like, how many people did you have to blackmail and threaten in order to accomplish this? Like, I love that he calls that out, and I love that Harry and Ron get to see and hear and experience that. Like, thinking about this from Ron and Harry's perspective, standing in a corner, terrified you're going to get caught, and then you're seeing all this and getting worked up and just are so, like, I just imagine they're angry at this point and scared, right? Because they know what this is going to do. That I can't imagine how traumatizing that would have been. I mean, it would have been traumatizing for an adult, let alone, like, two kids in the corner who have no say and aren't even supposed to be there, so...
Well, and it's something that I think will impact the way that Harry looks at politicians and certain politicians throughout the rest of the series. This experience of seeing this injustice happening to a friend of his will color everything else that happens. And I think that's a really interesting thing to see, that it's this kind of small moment where the boys shouldn't even be there, but it will revolutionize Harry in a lot of ways in the way he's going to interact with somebody like Fudge and others throughout the rest of the series. And so it's such a great wrap up to the chapter. Like, I feel like the beginning of the chapter and the end of this chapter have so much stuff happening, and it's really doing a great job, I think, of kind of just setting an incredible stage for the end of this book, especially since, you know, at this point, we've only got four chapters left. So it's awesome stuff.
I think it's really amazing how you look at the way that a lot of times authors or screenwriters or whoever sort of create tension in a situation, right? You kill off a character, you severely injure a character, you create a love triangle or a dismay in a relationship, right? There's all these ways that writers make you feel uncomfortable, right? They instill fear, that sort of thing. It's really interesting to me to see her use politics without using politics, right? Like, the removal of Dumbledore and Hagrid leaving and all these things, like, they shake you up and you are worried and you're nervous and you're like, no, you know this is wrong, even though you really have no reason to believe it's wrong, right? By all accords, you could argue that it was right for Dumbledore to be removed because there were all these attacks on his watch, right? But we already trust that character so strongly and know which side we want to be on that, like, it makes us angry and it makes us scared and it makes us nervous and, like, we don't know what we're going to do next. And even on a subsequent read through, feeling that way and getting worked up and being like, I almost don't want to finish this chapter because I'm so, like, emotionally drawn into this, on, you know, however many read throughs I'm through now. I think that's just so interesting how she can do that and how she finds kind of a unique way to do that beyond what we're used to with just kind of gore and straight up fright and scares. It's really interesting.
Well, I think that's another thing that's so interesting, too, is the way in which she's able to show the different facets and different sides of things. And what's going to be interesting is to watch people who you thought were, like, straight-up villains or throughout the series maybe change into something a little bit more nuanced or different, or get even worse, you know, in the reasons that they do that. And I think she does a really good job of just kind of playing that all out. And this is one of those chapters where I think it really starts, you know, that kind of process for a lot of those characters. And I also think this is a place where Strangely enough, you're not expecting, but all of a sudden the world gets a lot deeper. You know, we just talked to the Minister of Magic. You know, that's a big deal. And it's something to where she, in a, you know, a few paragraphs, has kind of expounded this world, like made this world much bigger than you even expected it might ever be, to involve the government, you know, of the wizarding world.
Yeah, for sure. And it's one of those things too, I think, when you were talking about painting absolute villains and heroes, this is where you start this part of the conversation with thinking Fudge is a terrible person for wanting to take Hagrid away to Azkaban and acting for acting. And, you know, you almost want to paint him a villain. And then when Lucius comes in and sort of wants to remove, you know, Dumbledore as well, he stands up for Dumbledore. He's like, that's the dumbest. He basically says, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, why would you do that? And they were like, and he was like, well, this is none of your business. You know, like, it was interesting because then it took him from villain to like, no, he's actually on our side. He thinks he's doing the right thing, but he's a little inept to seeing Lucius maybe not as a villain, but an opportunist, right? He sees an opportunity. We learn a little later on some more about his sort of opportunistic. We learn a little bit more a little later in the next chapter, specifically kind of about his opportunistic habits and you know, what he's doing, his ulterior motives, his very politicalness, if you will. But it was so interesting that you point that out, because it's so true. And it was in a heartbeat for Fudge. You hated him and then turns a corner and you're like, I can't 100% hate him anymore.
Right.
So it
is anybody who realizes that Dumbledore is the deal,
an asset, yeah,
the asset, somebody that you want on your side, and you're like, okay, yeah. And I think that's, again, that's just something that she's so good at, and it's what makes these books so worth rereading, because you continue to be able to pull out and to dig in and find the way in which these nuggets all fit together. And it's what makes this process, and it was what's making this reading and rereading and rereading of this series such a, well, it is a rewarding experience each time. And I can't wait, because like we said just a few minutes ago, it's only 4 chapters left. We're almost done with this book, and I can't wait to, you know, get to the end of this one and really just be able to...
Oh, it's getting so exciting.
I know, it's getting so exciting. So yeah, I'm beyond excited for that. And so... before we go, though, Drea, just let everybody know, where can they find you if they want to, you know, catch up with you, talk about anything Harry Potter or anything else going on? Where are you online?
Sure. So in Dumbledore's wise words, that, you know, help will always be available to Hogwarts for those, you know, who ask for it. You can ask for your help for me on Twitter at PCF Chick, or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's Kaufman.
Awesome. Yeah. And you could do the same for me on Twitter at MattRushing02, and I'm also on Instagram under the same moniker now, MattRushing02. So both places, so easy to find. I'm here on the network also doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, all about things revolving around Star Wars. We talk about all sorts of stuff. It's kind of hard to pinpoint anything we don't talk about for Star Wars, so check it out. I'm also doing a few other shows on the Trek FM Network. One is The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and then the 602 Club, which is the general geek show, and we talk about all the fandoms we love. So we just try to pull out something fun each and every week and talk about that over the many different fandoms. And then I have one other show, and it's called Cinema Stories, and that's just all about faith and film, and looking at film through that lens. And so you can find all of those on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Well, thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.